Chapter 23. Jesse hit rush hour traffic on his way back to Paradise. Traffic was a fact of life in L.A., but he'd been away from there for a long time. Paradise had changed him. Diana's murder had changed him. He just wasn't sure exactly how. Not yet. Except for the occasional reminder, a call from Jen, or the odd interleague visit from the Dodgers to Fenway Park, it almost felt like L.A. had happened in another lifetime. Even when he worked a case like he was working now, relying on all the savvy he'd gained in robbery-homicide division, Jesse could separate the knowledge from his memories of his time on the job in L.A. He had come to put things in distinct mental boxes. Jen here, experiences on the job there, Paradise over here. He was thinking of L.A. now, but it wasn't only the traffic. It was the rain. The roiling blanket of clouds that had all day hung like an ultimatum above eastern Massachusetts had made good on its gray threat. The skies opening up while he was still inside the bowling alley with Vinny, lightning snapping at him, tearing at the early dusk as he got into his Ford. In L.A., rain didn't come and go like it did here. It didn't throw just one or two big punches and leave by morning. When it came, it stayed. It stayed for days at a time. It hit you and hit you in the mouth and kept hitting you. And when it left scars behind it on hillsides and riversides and in people's lives. As Jesse listened to the rain pinging on the roof of his Explorer, he remembered having to be out on patrol in the relentless rain. It was odd, he thought, that he had lived in so many dry places, Tucson, Albuquerque, L.A., and how rain was so much more dangerous in dry places, how it could rise up and swallow you. He'd heard that L.A. had dried out, that all of California had, that the rains didn't come to stay anymore. But Jesse hadn't dried out. He had been able to resist Roscoe's red label, but had succumbed to Vinny's offer of a drink without any fight at all. He could still taste the scotch at the back of his throat, and began jonesing for more, the real reason the traffic was getting to him. L.A. drivers, crazy as they were, knew how to handle rain the way the people here could handle snow. Around here, rain slowed the world down, and Jesse wasn't in the mood to be slowed down. He wasn't in the mood for anything except his sofa and a few drinks. He knew his drinking partner, Ozzie Smith, would be there waiting for him, defying gravity, suspended in midair. Ozzie's silence could be damning, but could be a comfort, too. The pinging on the roof, the low radio, and his thoughts were rudely blotted out by the ringing of his phone coming through the speakers. He looked at the screen, hoping it wasn't Tamara Elkin calling. As if hoping had anything to do with it. He didn't know what to make of what had happened between them, not yet. Tamara, for all her laid-back Texas attitude and upbringing, was born in New York, raised by New Yorkers, and had worked in New York. She was intense in everything she did, and yet, after seeming to want him since the day they met, she'd backed off when given an opening. For all of his savvy, he thought he would never understand women. "What's up, Molly?" "I got a line on next of kin, and maybe an idea of what those guys were looking for in the house." That got Jesse's attention. "Let's hear." "I spoke to someone at the library, Mary Henderson, and she says that although the Kane family had pretty much run through all of their money, that they did own a jewelry and watch collection. All custom-made pieces by famous designers like Tiffany and Piaget. There were also some items they had purchased over the years. She said she was sure that a few of the pieces must have been sold off or donated, but that Maud Kane must have kept some of the pieces. Maybe the guys who ransacked her house got wind of it." "Sounds like it. Did you get any information on the value?" "And she said you'd have to talk to Mr. Wilmot. He runs the museum part of the library. He's the man who would know about the value of the Kane family collections, what they had donated, and any other information. He would know if Maud might have kept anything in the house. She also says she's sure the museum and library have some photos of the Kane collections stashed somewhere in storage." "Good work, Crane." "The only kind of work I do." Not for you to say, Jesse said, a smile in his voice. Somebody's got to say it occasionally. I just did. Last time you said it before that was... I'll write myself a note to say it at least once every 6 months. You said you got a line on next of kin? It's not much to go on, but I was right. Maud had an older sister, Mercy Updike, deceased. Died 7 years ago in Vermont. She left Paradise before I was born. Mary Henderson says she and Maud weren't close, barely spoke. But she believes that Mercy had one child. She's looking into it. Given the strain between the sisters, I doubt we could count on any relatives for ID. I'll talk to the ME and the town attorney about handling it through dental records. You got those, right? Yes. Good work. See, I said it again. Does that count toward my six-month quota? You're a funny man, Jesse Stone. I'm a man of many charms. Charm! Ha! There was a click and a two-note electronic tone, denoting that the call had ended. Chapter 24. Jesse finally relaxed as he drove down the road leading to his house. He didn't even mind the rain-battered for sale sign swinging in the wind at the edge of his property. It usually ate at him, the fact that he hadn't gotten a reasonable offer for the place since he put it on the market. He'd wanted to move back into town before Diana's murder. Now his desire to be less isolated was even more intense. His moment of relaxation was short-lived. In spite of Jesse's thirst and his sofa's siren song, they would have to wait. Tamara Elkins' Jeep was parked in front of his house. This far outside of town, the ME's presence was no coincidence. Whether or not he could make any sense of what had happened, or, more accurately, what hadn't happened, between them didn't matter. Jesse, his windbreaker collar up against the rain, got out of his Explorer, wrapped a knuckle on Tamara's driver's side window, and nodded for her to come inside. He didn't wait for her. Jesse didn't bother taking off his windbreaker. Instead, he went straight to the bar and poured two black labels, his with soda, Tamara's with one ice cube. He raised his glass to Ozzy and took a big swallow. Ozzy didn't seem interested in damning or consoling. Jesse was putting more scotch in his glass when he heard the front door close and the deadbolt click. Tamara came into the room, her tangled hair hanging damp and long over her shoulders. On his drive back from Boston, Jesse had gone over some things he might say to Tamara the next time they were together. He just hadn't anticipated the next time coming around so soon. He held her drink out to her, but she didn't take it. "No, thank you, Jesse," she said. "I don't think I'm up for it." Jesse shrugged and put her glass down. "This about last night?" he asked, taking a sip of his drink. "You don't beat around the bush, do you?" He took another sip. "What's the point in doing that?" "No point, I suppose." Tamara, like Jesse, had been distracted during the day, imagining what she might say and how she might say it. One of the reasons she hadn't gone through with things last night was that she hated the thought of any awkwardness between them. They had always been so comfortable together, and yet neither of them seemed capable of actually saying something meaningful for the awkwardness. Jesse filled the emptiness by pouring Tamara's untouched drink into his glass. That seemed to be the spark she needed. "Jesse, sit down," she said, pulling the drink out of his hand. He wasn't sure he liked that, but he sat down on the sofa. "There's always been an us, I think, from the day we met, even if that us existed only in my own head and heart. Even when Diana was still alive, I thought of the two of us as a pair, not like a couple, exactly, I don't know. I meant it when I said I was never anybody's Miss Wright, and I don't want to be. But I thought the two loners like us, we might be able to be something more than friends and less than... that we were good together. This isn't coming out right. Say what you've got to say. I used to dream about being with you." "Then why didn't you?" "I don't know. Maybe because I'm a fool." "You're a lot of things, Doc, but a fool isn't one of them." "Then because lovers have always been easy to come by for me. I've never had trouble getting men in my bed, but I've never had a lot of friends. I've never had any like you. He laughed. Not sure how to take that. As a compliment, you ass. She shook her head at him. I guess I'm not willing to risk what we have, because no matter what you might say, I'd be your rebound girl, and that's how you would think of me. I don't think I could stand that. But last night doesn't have to mean anything more than it was. We can go back to what we were, you showing up at my door and drinking, talking. You see, Jesse, I don't think we can go back. I don't want to. But you just said, last night, when you kissed me, I think it kind of woke me up. It made me realize some things. Like? Like I'm not willing to let you drink yourself to death anymore. At least I'm not willing to be part of it anymore. After what happened to Diana, sure, I understand you're drinking. Hell, I was over here half the time drinking with you. All of us understood how you felt, and we were willing to look the other way. But not me, at least not from now on. If I was willing to give up sleeping with you to save our friendship, I sure am willing to give up drinking with you. You done? Almost. What else? Just because I passed up my opportunity doesn't mean I can't get a little jealous. I heard about that woman who was in your office the morning of Suit's wedding. I heard she'd make Venus green with envy. Bella Lawton, Jesse said, smiling. How'd you know about her? I have my sources. She leaned over and kissed Jesse on the cheek. I'm heading out now that I've had my say. Oh, I almost forgot. It's definite. Maude Kane died of a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, plain and simple. I can't say the stress of what they did to her induced it, but it sure didn't help. Chapter 25. After stopping at the donut shop for coffee, Jesse took a detour away from the station and backtracked the few short blocks to Berkshire Street. He had taken a quick look at the reports from Molly, Alicia, and Gabe Weathers after they had spoken to the residents living on Maude Kane's block. It had netted them very little information. But canvassing, knocking on doors, and talking to neighbors was real police work. More cases got closed with worn soles and bruised knuckles than by DNA or deduction. The thing was, Jesse had learned that it often paid dividends to knock on the same doors more than once. That people weren't robots, they were imperfect, and sometimes, with a few days for their minds to focus on other matters, they would recall things they had forgotten or give you information they weren't even aware they had. There were dangers in it, too. The human mind is a curious thing, and it can conflate events or even create memories to fit scenarios according to what it's heard or read. It isn't malicious or intentional, and Jesse accounted for the possibility. One of the ways he protected against it was to catch people off guard. That's why he was standing on the porch of 20 Berkshire Street at 7 a.m., his finger pressed to the doorbell. Unlike Maude Kane's house, which was directly across the street, 20 Berkshire was well-maintained and updated. It was a pumpkin orange and forest green farmhouse, Victorian, without much of the fussiness of the more elaborate Victorians up on the bluffs. Jesse backed his finger off the bell, knowing that when the door was eventually answered, the person on the other side wouldn't be very happy. He was right about that.
For Christ's sakes almighty, who the hell is getting me out of bed at this hour?
An angry woman's voice cut through the wood and glass door as if it were made of tissue paper.
Who is it?
Chief Stone, ma'am, of the Paradise PD.
Two locks clicked open and the door pulled back. Standing there in the vestibule was a slender woman in her early 60s, with short, slightly disheveled gray-brown hair. She had a thin, handsome face that was probably much more welcoming with a smile on it. She was dressed in a beat-up white robe and had bare feet.
What can I do for you, Chief?
I'm here about Maude Kane. Her face went from anger to sadness.
Terrible thing, terrible.
You're Mrs. Lynch, is that right?
Sharon Lynch, yes. Come on in, Chief. I'll make us some coffee.
Jesse followed her into the kitchen and sat quietly, listening to Sharon Lynch make small talk as she put on the coffee. He was careful not to speak unless she asked a specific question. He was anxious to hear how she filled the void.
I don't know what I can tell you that I didn't tell that pretty officer of yours who was here on Sunday. Beautiful black woman. What was her name? Alicia. Alicia, right. Like I said, I'm not sure what I can add, Chief. How would you like your coffee?
I'll have it the way you're having it. That made her smile, as he knew it would. She placed the coffee down on the placemat. Here you go. She sat directly across from him. What was it you said to Alicia? I haven't had a chance to study the reports. She didn't like that and made a face.
Ralph, that's Mr. Lynch, and I were going to go down to Boston to visit our kids, Jeremy and Jill.
And, Jesse cut her off, where's Ralph now? She liked that even less.
Work. He owns a construction business. He's an early riser and is out of the house most days before I get up. Like I was saying, we were going down to Boston, and we're going to get an early start, but one of his men called and he had to go into the office to put out a fire.
Did you or Ralph notice anything out of the ordinary Saturday?
Like we told your officer, we didn't notice a thing.
Maud has kept to herself lately and didn't come out of the house much these days. What was Maud like?
Nice woman. A very proud woman and one ahead of her time. She kept her own name.
Pity, though. That got Jessie's attention. What's a pity? Her dying?
Of course, but that's not what I mean, Chief. Their family had more money than the Lord himself. But poor Maud needed to take in boarders for years in order to pay her bills. You'd think the people in the family would have planned better for their own. Charity is a good thing, but at the expense of your own, I just don't see it.
Boarders?
Boarders, yes. Lodgers, you know. But not for the last few years, Sharon said. She couldn't handle it any longer. Still, until about 5 years ago, she was still taking them in, mostly in the summer.
Jesse thought about questioning her further, but decided he could always come back another time. First, he wanted to knock on some other doors. Then, he wanted to have a talk with someone at Town Hall. Chapter 26. Jesse had hoped to avoid the mayor completely, but her black Suburban was parked in its official spot. He knew that once he set foot inside the building, word would leak back to her. So now, the best he could hope for was to put off seeing her until he had spoken to Dick Bradshaw, the town code enforcement officer. Bradshaw's car, with the Paradise Town seal painted on its doors, was in its spot, too. He laughed to himself. One for two wasn't bad. You bat 500 in baseball, and they'd build you a separate wing in Cooperstown. Jesse rapped his knuckles on the wavy glass panel of the code enforcement office. Come in. Dick Bradshaw was sitting behind an ancient metal desk, cluttered with files and papers, a computer monitor off to one side. Bradshaw's white uniform shirt fit him about as well as Roscoe Niles' T-shirt had fit him. Dick had put on some poundage since Jesse had moved to Paradise, and his hair, what was left of it anyway, had turned a wiry steel gray.
Jesse, Bradshaw said, a big smile on his face as he looked up from his coffee and egg sandwich. Been a long time since we've seen you in here.
Jesse nodded to his left toward the mayor's offices.
Yeah, the mayor certainly has no love for you. What did you ever do to her to make her dislike you so much?
I didn't have to do anything, Dick. I just had to be who I am.
True. You never were much for playing ball by the politician's rules, were you?
Jesse shook his head.
Sit down, Bradshaw said. Sit.
Jesse sat across from Bradshaw, shaking his hand as he did.
Want some coffee, Jesse? I can brew us up another pot.
I'm fine.
So, what is it I can do for you? Or is it the chief of police I'm speaking to?
Don't sweat it, Dick. This is off the record.
Okay, shoot.
Maud Kane. Bradshaw's smile vanished.
Awful news. She was a fine lady, and this town wouldn't be what it is without her family.
Sorry I never met her.
But you're not here for a testimonial, are you? Makes me wonder what you want with the code enforcement officer.
Relax, Dick. It's that I hear Maud took in boarders. Don't you need a license from your department to do that? A food and health license from the Commonwealth and a safety inspection certificate from the PFD? Bradshaw shrugged his big round shoulders.
What can I tell you, Jesse? She was already doing it when I took over from Hurley, and he told me to just let her be. that she and her family had helped make this town, and that I was to lay off or it would be trouble for me. And what was the harm, really? We didn't have much of a tourist industry back in the day. So when people passed through town, there was only the hotel, or the few unofficial places where people rented out rooms. If there were going to be tax issues, they would be hers and hers alone. Not that anyone in Paradise was going to drop a dime on her. There weren't even any B&Bs in town. You wanted to stay in one of those, you had to go to Marblehead.
Uh-huh.
Anything else I can do for you? You said it was unofficial, Dick, but did you make her keep any sort of records at all? Did she have to report to you in any way? How do you mean? Did she at least have to keep a guest book or a roster of guests, anything like that? Sorry, Jesse, no records, no complicity. We couldn't risk being held accountable. You know how it works?
I do.
So what is it, Jesse? You think the people who did this to Maud had once stayed with her?
Maybe.
At this point, I don't know anything for sure, but it makes sense to look into all possibilities. You never know if some guy who stayed at the house ended up in jail or prison. Guys on the inside talk a lot of garbage, spin all sorts of bull. One says something about the old lady who had a safe in her house or gold bars. Believe me, it wouldn't be the first time. Man, I'd hate to think that, but it makes sense. Makes you think twice about letting strangers into your house. So, Jesse said, you can understand why a guest book would be helpful. What can I say, Jesse? I don't know of one. Maybe you should have someone go through the house.
Thanks, Dick, I'll do that. But thought I'd come here first.
Where you headed now?
As he stood, Jesse pointed to Mayor Walker's office.
Once more onto the breach, huh?
Yeah, I might as well get it over with before they come looking for me. And Dick, keep this conversation strictly between us for now. Anyone asks, make something up. Jesse gave a half salute to Dick Bradshaw and left. But Nita Thompson, Mayor Walker's hatchet woman, was there waiting for him.